Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Shamefully, Kieran, despite everything we've said about boycotting this World Cup, we are fitting this in on Wednesday between the Spain thrashing Costa Rica and Belgium playing Canada. Because like 12-year-olds, when football's on, when you have to watch the football. Although, Kieran, as a news story, this is a tournament that keeps on giving. We'll discuss this story in more detail on Sunday, but news coming out that Denmark have suggested a quite radical move this afternoon.
Yes, they are trying to persuade other countries, and they've prepared themselves to cut the relationship, cut the ties with FIFA because of unhappiness with the way that Gianni Infantino has made things difficult for European clubs who are unsatisfied with or dissatisfied with certain aspects of the way that fans have been able to wear clothes, that they're not allowed to wear the armband and so on. Watch this space. And we fully understand that the activities off the pitch don't mirror what's happening on the pitch, because it's got to be said, it's been a fantastic tournament in terms of football, but we can't just view the football in isolation, just as you can't separate the artist from the art, which is why I don't listen to Morrissey anymore.
Yeah, you still listen to the Smiths, though. That's the trouble, isn't it? It's the same with me. It seems, from what we can hear this afternoon from reputable sources, that the FA are one of the countries that Denmark are talking to, and that the English FA are very amenable to this discussion. What it means in terms of FIFA, UEFA, we will hopefully will have more details by Sunday, and we will discuss it then. I think as well, Kieran, certain FIFA officials are hinting that when we say FIFA, they would perhaps prefer us to say Infantino, because it's clear that he's totally enthralled to the Qatari government. It seems he's doing what he's told at the moment, and he's just not fit for purpose, full stop, is he?
Well, perhaps today he feels Qatari, just as yesterday he felt like a woman, and the day before he claimed to feel gay, and the day before that he claimed to be African.
Yeah, well, he lives in Qatar, so I think it's more likely he feels Qatari than any of the other things, to be perfectly honest. It doesn't seem possible, Kieran, but FIFA have been upstaged by one player who's in the World Cup but also was playing for an English club. And that same English club, Manchester United, have leapt to the headlines, haven't they?
Yes, indeed. So, first of all, we had the announcement on Tuesday evening that Cristiano Ronaldo had agreed to leave Manchester United by mutual consent. What's likely to have happened is there will have been threats by both sides. I think Cristiano Ronaldo has engineered this, because if he had been if he'd actually agreed a deal with Manchester United, then there could have been some form of financial settlement, which wouldn't necessarily have been particularly beneficial to him. But he would have also had to have signed a non-disclosure agreement, and he wouldn't have been able to have his sort of the equivalent of somebody saying that, I've been called a slag on Facebook, magnified via Piers Morgan, asking him a bunch of very, very easy questions. So he won't be playing for Manchester United again. From their point of view, they won't have to pay him probably around about £12 million, which was the remaining wage cost in terms of his contract. People say, well, surely that will have an impact upon shirt sales, but it wasn't. Manchester United's merchandise sales in the last 12 months, in season 21-22, were actually the lowest they'd been for 6 years, and that's more to do with broader issues in respect of the club. So it's a sad end in the way for, people can dislike him because he played for Manchester United, but he is an incredible athlete. He was their leading goal scorer last season. And like all relationships when things start to sour, they can very rapidly go downhill.
Some suggestion as well, though, Kieran, that it might be good news for Man United in it frees up some transfer money in January.
Yes, it will allow them to reduce their ongoing commitments in terms of the Ronaldo issue. So Manchester United have spent a lot of money over the course of this summer. We don't talk about what's happened on the pitch. I think it'll be a very interesting January transfer window because you've got players returning from the World Cup. Some will be fatigued, some won't. And I think Manchester United will have to, like all other clubs, to do an assessment as to the resources they require for the rest of the season. But in the case of Manchester United, they want to be in the top four because it's Champions League or nowhere as far as some clubs are concerned.
And possibly in the way that Boy George will be upset at being upstaged by Matt Hancock, Cristiano Ronaldo may be upset, but he's been upstaged by the owners of the club.
Yes, an hour after the announcement with regards to Cristiano Ronaldo came out, rumours started to circulate that Manchester United was up for sale. We saw a surge in the club's share price on the back of that. The share price has effectively increased by a quarter over the course of the last 24 hours. And then there was a sort of very corporate press release coming out, which said that the Glazer family were open to discussion with regards to other people wanting to help them take the club forwards. So this was could be in the form of an investor who just buys a percentage of the club, a minority percentage. Although I would probably caution against that if it's you against six of the Glazer family, you probably know how they're going to vote, and it's not going to be on the basis of the sensibleness of the decision. It's families tend to stick together. But the alternative to that would be an overall takeover, a complete sale of Manchester United, and that's why the share price has surged, because investors or speculators will be looking at a prospective sale of the club, probably in the region of £4 to £4.5 billion. I've been busy with the spreadsheet overnight. The Baroness was wondering what on earth I was doing at 2 a.m. on the internet, and it was in fact downloading some historical figures. But that means that if somebody does come in, they're likely to be paying somewhere in the region of $24, $26 per share. Manchester United's share price was $13 before the announcements first started to come through. It's now at $17, and certainly there's scope, if you are a speculator, to make a quick buck if it all comes to fruition. But there's no guarantee in business of anything.
Do you realise, Kim, it's probably slightly embarrassing for the Baroness when she's having lunch on a Friday with some of the other ladies from near the vineyard, and one of them says, "Oh, my husband's up at 2 o'clock every morning looking at Pornhub," and the other women all go, "I know, it's terrible, what can you do?" And the poor old Baroness has to sit there going, "Yeah, my one's looking up company's house." also slightly embarrassingly as well, the day before the Glazers announcement, I was working with an American comedian who says, "Oh, I hear the Glazers are selling up." I went, "I don't think so. I think you'll find the price of football would know that before you do, young American." Is it a coincidence, Kieran, that this is coming so soon after the Liverpool announcement?
No, I think you're absolutely right in linking the two things together. What we saw earlier in this year, first of all, was the sale of Chelsea for £2.5 billion. And that did cause eyebrows to raise. Chelsea was a distressed asset. Roman Abramovich's other assets had all been frozen by the UK government. There was a genuine chance on one or two occasions that Chelsea would have gone out of business. It had lost £900,000 a week for 19 years. So who in their right minds would come in and buy the club for such a price, then spend £62 million on Cucurella? Yeah, that shows just how daft the new owners were. That sort of started to sow a few seeds in the minds of Fenway Sports Group, because their attempt to take over the domestic game through Project Big Picture had failed. Their attempts to effectively control the European game via the Super League, that had failed. So where is the growth in the club that they've been hoping for? I think they perhaps perceive us to be now at maximum Premier League. And therefore, you get out whilst you're on top. You know, I think they're very good in terms of timing. They've got a very good relationship with the Glazer family because they've worked on both of those projects together historically. And I suspect there's been communication between the two parties. There's been a lot of interest in Liverpool, and therefore the Glazers said, well, if Liverpool are up for sale at a peak price, can we extract some peak value from Manchester United at the same time? And also it means that we're not being abused left, right and centre on social media.
The problem is, Kieran, and you say about a new owner taking on the Glazers in the boardroom. I reckon I'd take them on in the Pawsons, all six of them, quite happily. But whoever buys Liverpool, if somebody buys Liverpool, one individual buys Liverpool, then you'll have to spend money on the squad. Probably it's an aging squad, but the ground's in good shape. Whereas whoever buys Manchester United for, what sort of figure would you expect one person to pay?
I think we're looking at 4 to 4.5 billion based on various multiples that I've been looking at and trying to get a real flavour. There's a case for saying you could go as far as 5 billion because there's only one Mona Lisa. There's only one Manchester United in terms of it's the one football club that if you go anywhere in the world and you say, name me a football club from England, it's likely to be the first one that they mention in it. So for that trophy asset, for that unique place they play as far as English and perhaps European football is concerned, that adds potential value to the asking price.
Well, also what adds potential money to the asking price is that you've discussed this quite often. Old Trafford needs work, without a doubt. And if Manchester United are to be competitive at the top of the table, if that's what the new owner wants, that squad needs work as well. So that's lots of extra millions, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I know this sounds sort of very glib in a world which is going through an economic crisis. If you're paying £4.5 billion for a company, spending £500-600 million on improving its efficiency is actually relatively small beer because compared to the original price, it's a bit like you're buying a house and just putting in a couple of new windows. So I don't think that will put off new prospective owners. Manchester United generates £110 million a year from ticket sales in its present form. I think the attraction of expanding the stadium will be that there's no reason why it couldn't add another 40 to 50 million on top of that quite easily, because the new owners are most likely to be targeting expansion towards the prawn sandwich brigade and the hospitality sector.
I was going for a lower rent example of that, Kieran. I was going to say it's like when you go into the pub on a cold day and you ask for a pint of Guinness and they say, do you want a whiskey with that? You go, all right. peanuts? Go on, push the boat out. It's Christmas approaching, Kieran, as you can tell by the increasing amount of joy in my voice. But for one South East London club, the Grinch has arrived early before Christmas.
Yes, this is Millwall, and Millwall have had to effectively close down their retail operation because the agents of Hummel, who are their kit manufacturers, Elite Sports, have difficulties. Mm. Now, it's not only affecting Millwall. Southampton have had to do the same. Coventry have had to do the same because all of those kits are made by Hummel. And therefore, there is a danger, there is a suspicion that Elite Sports may have to go into administration because the more you start to look at this story, the more and more some sort of friends of the show start to appear. So Elite Sports have a dispute with Rangers.
Yeah.
That is all to do with Mike Ashley and a kit deal. So that's looking complicated. Elite Sports were fined by a Scottish court in respect of a price-fixing deal. as were Rangers, as were another company as well. So that all caused issues and cash flow problems. I understand that Elite Sports also supply Wasps Rugby Club. Now, Wasps Rugby Club doesn't exist, so therefore there's a lot of cash tied up in their kits and what's going to happen to that. So that's causing more cash flow problems. Millwall have had to close down their ability to sell kit. And of course, we've got Black Friday coming up later this week. It's peak selling season in terms of Christmas presents. So, all of these clubs would be looking to sell merchandise and to make some return on the back of that. And you cannot sell football clubs in January and February for love nor money, because everybody's spent what they've got and belts are being tightened. So there's no winners in respect of this. I think in the case of Southampton, some fans have already paid for kit and they've not received it. If Elite go into administration, the administrators aren't obliged to forward them the kit. They become unsecured creditors. So it could turn out quite bad for the fans of some of these clubs. Although, Southampton as a Premier League club, perhaps the owners will say, well, we will honour those contracts in due course because we want to maintain good relations with the fans.
This story only broke this afternoon, Kieran. And as you know, my research is cursory at best. When I only had an hour between the end of the Germany game and the start of the Spain game, 10 minutes of which was spent with me and Ed laughing after the end of the Germany game, because that was hilarious. It seems to me, though, that at Millwall, the whole of the club shop has stopped. It's not just selling shirts, and there seems to be a lot of angry fans. And also, in the course of that cursory research, it seems that Millwall don't actually run their own club shop. Is that correct?
That does appear to be the case. And that's often how things are organised. You effectively outsource. So in the case of Everton, who, ironically, their kit is made by Hummel, but they've outsourced it to another organisation called Fanatic. So Everton fans will be able to buy Hummel kits. Southampton and Millwall and Coventry and some other fans, they won't be able to buy Hummel kit until the issue with Elite Sports is resolved. So the Southampton shop, I believe, has been closed down. I think Coventry, you've got a feel for the fans of that club. Yeah, one issue after another. They lost the ground. There've been issues. It looks like now that the club has been acquired by somebody new, but is the ground being acquired, or is the ground being acquired by Mike Ashley, who's already come up in this conversation on one occasion. Coventry City fans have I don't know what they've done, but don't bother buying a lottery ticket for a long time if I were you.
Yeah, well, John Hartson, rather bizarrely, was saying that they've never been the same since he left. That was his theory today. While he was co-commentator, and he just said it in passing, all because they asked if he'd ever played with some Moroccan players. He said, "Oh yeah, Coventry, we had a really good side, but then I left, and it all went downhill from them." So okay, that's you believe what you want to believe, John. I was surprised to hear that. I just assumed every club run their own club shop. I'm surprised to hear that they. It's maybe Palace do as well, but you would assume that's one thing the club would run themselves, wouldn't you?
No. I think the Chelsea megastore was run by Nike, and that caused complications when Chelsea had their Abramovich related issues early this season. Football clubs at times would say, "Well, we simply don't want the risk of running it." You're experts in retail. You can therefore focus on that aspect of the club, and we'll simply either charge you a rental fee, or we'll come to some arrangement in terms of commissions for sales, and the activity therefore becomes somebody else's problem.
Now, Kieran, as a Palace fan, we have pretend beef with Watford. They don't like us. We pretend to care. It's not really an issue, but there is one approach that Watford take to acquiring money that I quite like, because they basically have the same attitude towards it that I have. When they want more of it, they borrow it.
Yes. This is it's 5 weeks since Watford last went to a bank and said, can you give us some more money? And they've done that quite a few occasions already this season in respect of players that they sold to Udinese, which is the club which is, of course, owned by the Pozzo family, who also own Watford. And this does get my, you know, amber lights, if not red, ringing. Given that Watford are, of course, in receipt of parachute payments, yeah. they've sold quite a few players over the course of the summer. And as we've sort of established, most deals these days are done on credit. So therefore, a club will pay perhaps 50% of the deal as a deposit and then pay the rest in installments over 2 or 3 years or whatever it's going to be. Well, this latest case is in relation to Emmanuel Dennis, who they sold to Forest. If they paid down half as a deposit, Forest, they've paid £9 million, but there's two instalments of £4.5 million, which are due to be paid in 2023, I think, in 2024. And Watford has said, we're not prepared to wait for those instalments. They've gone to our good friends Macquarie, the Australian Vampire Kangaroo Bank, who are quite famous, stroke infamous, in the football world, and they do a very professional job. You know, I like calling them names, but I'm not criticizing their lack of being able to come up with these deals. And what happens is that Watford say, look, we've got two IOUs from Nottingham Forest. Those are worth £9 million each. How much will you give them for us? So it's a bit like going to a pawnbroker. It's a bit like going to a payday lender. And Macquarie will say, well, you know, you are Watford. You're not guaranteed on getting back to the Premier League this season. We'll give you, you know, it could be 8 million, it could be 8.5, it could be 7.5. But it's likely they're going to be charging interest of, you know, probably 8, 9, 10% on this. So it indicates to me that Watford are in need of cash more than anything else. They've still got some very good players, yeah, and they certainly have turned things around on the pitch in the last few weeks. I suspect the reason why they've done this is because they have shot up the table. The last thing they want to do is to have to sell a couple of players in the January window, and therefore this is a way of preventing that being a necessity.
I'm not necessarily speaking from experience here, Kieran, but does the bank never say to them, hang on a second, what did you do with that last 8 million quid? You're only here 5 weeks ago.
Well, yeah, that did make me think exactly the same thing. Yeah, Watford have got a squad that has come down from the Premier League. They do have significant pay cuts embedded into contracts, should that be the case. But you know, Watford don't generate huge crowds themselves. You know, they do reasonably well by the standards of a Championship club. And cash is king in business, and clearly they want some to help them last out the next few months.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Another club we've talked about a lot recently, Kieran, a lot, have also improved on the pitch, but off the pitch, things aren't getting any better for Southend United.
Yes, and we've often spoken about, you know, that there are many reasons why we love being football fans and why we're proud to be football fans. Well, I think what's happened at Southend is another example of this. Non-playing staff haven't been paid. Now, you know, these are the people like you and I that get a monthly paycheck or you know, get money coming in, which you are reliant upon. And if that money doesn't materialize because your employer, for whatever reason, says, we're not paying you, we're paying you late, well, you've got standing orders, you've got direct debits, you end up paying bank charges, and it creates, you know, it creates uncertainty, it creates stresses for people. Well, here the Shrimpers Trust, the Southend United Supporters Group, they've gone out and they've lent the club 40 grand of their own money in good faith to allow those non-playing staff to be paid. Yet what other industry would you get where your customers say, we're going to do our best, we're going to give our money to people whom we don't have a direct connection with, you know, because we go along effectively to watch the first team. But you've got to give huge credit here to the Shrimpers Trust. I've also spoken to some people connected to Southend United. We can't say who, and you know, from the stories that we're hearing, that the club isn't paying bills, and therefore things are having to be bought effectively on a goodwill basis by those people connected to the club rather than the club itself, and that's very disappointing, because the owner of Southend, Ron Martin, potentially could become extremely rich through the sale of Roots Hall and its development into residential properties or retail properties, and relocating the ground. I think it's called Fossett's Hall or Fossett something. But he is a successful guy in his own right as well. So, you know, why he's playing this game of, you know, who blinks first in respect of deals with the revenue and kicking down the road money owed to them, it does seem very harsh. And the danger is that goodwill ebbs away more and more between owner and fan base, and it makes it difficult for the owner to have a relationship going forwards.
It's like the sand on the water at Blackpool, but Blackpool Southend. I've got Strictly Come Dancing in my mind. Sorry, that tide has ebbed away a long time ago. Any goodwill between Ron Martin and the fans has disappeared, and this is a wonderful gesture by the trust, but that's this month sorted out. It's not that long till next month. They probably can't afford to do that again. So it's one thing Ron Martin playing games with HMRC, but playing games with his own staff is unforgivable, isn't it?
Yes. And what's in it for him? Some people seem to get some pleasure. There's no doubt that running a football club is an expensive business. And Ron Martin has put money into the club. Nobody's denying that. But what I think you've also got to do is to be straight with people and to ensure that those people who are, you know, they're on minimum wage or they're on a relatively low wage. You know, everybody's struggling at present to deal with those, you know, bigger heating bills, fuel bills, food bills, and so on. And to put people under such pressure, under those circumstances, just seems ridiculously harsh and shows a lack of empathy as being a human being. Mm.
Two teams a long way away geographically have published their latest accounts, Kieran.
Yes. First of all, we've got Bristol City, and they only lost £500,000 a week in the Championship last season, and people say, well done. You know, I thought football returned to the real world. You know, COVID has gone. How on earth is this the case? You know, Bristol City are actually, as a business, run in quite a good way, in the sense that there's been quite a lot of ground development there, and they're trying to do the things which, you know, we've spoken about on the show on many occasions, in terms of trying to get it to generate money 360 odd days a year, as opposed to the 25 to 30. But they're still not there. The wage bill is high. I think they were in a danger of breaching financial fair play, but some of the changes in the rules to FFP on the back of COVID have probably seen them get through that okay. But they're going to have a problem in 22-23. They're indebted to the owner, Steve Lansdowne. I think people might have heard of Hargreaves Lansdowne, sort of the finance house. He's successfully run that He's also involved with Bristol Rugby. He is a local lad, but the amount of money that he's put into the club is you know, around about 200 million. And you wonder, why on earth would anybody continue to do this? Because when was the last time Bristol City were in the playoffs? When was the last time they were challenging for promotion? And it's costing him £500,000 a week for the privilege.
Hmm. And the other accounts come from Scotland, Kieran.
Yes, this is Aberdeen, and yeah, I probably should be castigated for this. We know that the Scottish Premiership is going to be won by Celtic or Rangers, but I always thought, well, yeah, Aberdeen aren't too far away, and in my mind, I've always got them with perhaps Hibs and Hearts as chasing third place, and that could be beneficial in Scottish football, because potentially it's going to get you into a Europa League place or the Europa Conference. So Aberdeen had an absolute stinker of a season last year. I think they finished third bottom of the Premiership. And again, you know, does that mean that they ran a tight ship financially? Well, they lost around about £5 million, and This is you know, I've always said that Scottish football in the main is run on a break even basis, but this is what happens when a club that does have an ambition, and I think their ambition is to try to get a European place, doesn't achieve that. It commits itself to wages that are effectively not sustainable, and it ends up losing a significant amount of money. I think Aberdeen are trying to move from Pittodrie at present to a new ground, which again will be more multifunction than what they have at present, in order to try to generate more cash to try to live on more of an even keel.
Yeah, our penultimate story, Kieran, is straight out of the annals of John le Carré. It's a proper spy story, conspiracy theory one, isn't it?
Yes. This is Serbia. The Serbian government isn't particularly keen on democracy and isn't particularly keen on a free press as such. And the person that's got a stake in I think he's got a stake. It's either Southampton or West Ham. He has a TV station which was bidding for the Premier League rights, and therefore that effectively gave his TV channels, who are in opposition to the government, an opportunity to show some dissent. So what's happened is the Serbian government's popped along and said, we'll offer the Premier League 10 times the amount of money as this guy. And clearly, that, you know, on the back of that, they picked up the deal. You know, the Premier League, as always, blinded by the check, doesn't want to get involved in politics unless it suits the Premier League, of course, which means that another opportunity to have an independent voice to question the official version, which is, you know, one of the benefits of any form of democracy, is being squashed, and it allows an authoritarian regime via football to control the media and have a greater stranglehold over dissent.
Yeah, if there are any Serbian journalists listening to this, and I say that with some confidence, because it's amazing how many people from various backgrounds do. I'd be really interested if they were willing to come on. They wouldn't have to give a name if they were reluctant to do so. But this is a story I'm struggling to really get the ins and outs of just from internet research. I would love to hear from somebody who's able to give us some insight, unless, of course, that journalist is undercover and working for the government, in which case we'd have been completely taken in. But it's a really interesting story, and one that connects a lot of it sort of leads nicely into our last story, Kieran. So we started with FIFA, the first of many discussions we'll be having about them in weeks, months, years to come, and we end with FIFA, and somebody we probably have to extend the naughty stare because Infantino and Blatter take up quite a lot of space on it. But this person's got a chair of his own, basically, isn't he?
Yes, this is Jack Walker. And for those people not Jack familiar, Warner. Jack Walker. Sorry, Jack Warner. Sorry, this is Jack Warner. And for those people not familiar with Jack, he is the he is the Trinidad and Tobago representative, but he's also been very senior and influential in Caribbean football for many years. Now, I used to teach in Trinidad, and Jack Warner was. Well known in local circles there for being, shall we say, a controversial politician who seemed to have his hands in many activities. He was also a FIFA exec member and was involved in the awarding of the 2018 World Cup to Russia and the 2022 World Cup to Qatar. The FBI, in its investigations, seemed to think that large sums of money arrived in some of Jack Warner's accounts, and perhaps that warranted greater scrutiny. So what's happened is that that Jack Warner, through his political connections in Trinidad, was able to block an extradition request by the FBI to have him tried in respect of some form of embezzlement, some form of misappropriation of funds for nefarious purposes. And the Trinidad authorities said, no, Jack Warner, yeah, fine, upstanding citizen. We're not going to extradite him, but it's gone to another court. He's lost his appeal. And it, he in theory can be extradited, but yeah, given the nature of law, there are appeals upon appeals upon appeals, and no doubt he's going to fight this because the FBI have a very very long file on Jack Warner. I think part of that file was given to them by the superbly named and no longer with us, Chuck Blazer, who, again, a FIFA member with an interesting backstory and an interesting cash. But here, Chuck Blazer died a few years ago. If he does lose this and gets held up, it goes to court. I think it would be a fascinating one to pop down and chew some popcorn whilst listening to Jack Warner defend himself and the prosecution. Look at quite a number of transactions in terms of his personal banking activities.
Yeah, Chuck Blazer always had the look of Father Christmas about him, but a Father Christmas who was just being photographed by the police after being arrested after a night out in Lapland. I'm hoping Jack Warner spent most of his money fighting the FBI and won't worry too much about the fact that I suggest he's also a ticket tout on a global scale, wasn't he?
Yes.
Basically, run his own ticket agency, and it seemed that tickets for various World Cups were available at all prices, especially the $2,000 and above price. now, I've got some what I think is exciting news, Kieran. We've had some cracking interviews lately, and we are considering, because the interviews have been so long and so good, that we might release some of them as separate things, just drop them into your files or however the technical stuff works. I don't know. Guy's very vague on the detail in case we find out and go it alone. Next week we have, Kieran, an expert on the history and economics of football programs, which I am very excited about. And we thought that we'd give you, our lovely listeners, the chance to throw in a couple of questions yourself. If you've got a program from an odd, obscure game that you want to know about, just email us at questions@priceoffootball.com and put programs in brackets, and we'll put them to our program expert. I already know I've got quite a collection of Palace programs. Unfortunately, they're cluttering up most of our sort of workroom studio. I also know they're not worth that much because I haven't got one complete season. Just for some reason, I can't remember why, two games a season, I didn't get a program. I don't know why I did that. Thus rendering all the rest worthless. Kieran, what are you drinking? For a teetotaler, you make a lot of noise drinking stuff. You know that.
I've been on the radio since 5:30 this morning, non-stop. So I'm I'm desperate for water. I can just about talk. And during the course of this program, I've had a text from Colin Murray to say, any chance of coming on at 10:30 tonight? To which, of course, I can't turn down Colin Murray. So I think I'm going to be on my own naughty step with the Baroness because she's not seen me all day.
Yeah, give Colin Murray my love, won't you? Also, I'd like to point out, Kieran, I've been watching quite a remarkable series on BBC One about the history of the SAS fighting the Germans and the Italians in the desert. I don't think they'd be that sympathetic towards you not having enough water because you were doing radio stuff all day. Those were men that fought for 24 hours on one drop of water, Kieran. They would lick a stamp and use that moisture for 24 hours. They won't be worried about you not being able to get your filtrated water and your little sniff of quinoa. I've lost my thread now. Oh, yeah, programs, because I remember, I think it's about 1981, 1982, going to a Derby game, and we lost our shit because they had an A4 programme, and we'd never seen anything like it. So I'm really looking forward to that interview, and I hope you have some many questions for us. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod. Some many questions, that's terrible, isn't it? Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod as well, that'd be very kind. You can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. We'll be back on Monday with our usual questions pod. If you have a question you'd like answered, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell, which is obviously going to be short because he's parched. He's not had a drop of water for hours because he's so in demand.
And this is why I'm not in the SAS. If people have been wondering, they say, God, he knows his spreadsheets. Did he ever have an earlier career in the SAS? Well, that's why I'm not there. Yeah, you know, I openly admit it.
Kieran, there are many things we wonder about you in this pod. Why you're not in the SAS as well. Also, my father-in-law, God rest his soul, his last stint, he was a Methodist superintendent, which is a punishment officer, I think, in the Methodist Church. I never quite got to the bottom of it. But he was in Hereford for the last 5 years of his career, which I just, any pub in Hereford you go to, inevitably you start talking to a stranger, he's in the SAS. Every single one, you think, mate, you're 20 stone. You've had about 18 pints of cider since I was in. If you're in the SAS, you are either deep undercover or you're a liar. It's as simple as that.
Brilliant. Sorry, I'm croaking it.
Yes, customary farewell.
Customary farewell, sorry. Yes, I have completely lost my train of thought here.
We need to get you to an oasis as quickly as possible, don't we? Do.
Yes. Well, thank you to everybody from Patreon for supporting the show. Thank you for all the kind words. And also thank you to our fans in Iran. We did have some communication from them when I mentioned that the Baroness was supporting Iran against England, and it was very sad to read, you know, that they said, actually, we would rather that England won the match, and could I have a word with the Baroness? I explained how our sweepstakes system works, and had a long chat. There's some very terrible things happening there, and we just send our love and best wishes to our listeners there. The Baroness did cheer when England scored each of the six goals, if that's any very, very minor consolation for you when she heard the story. If you want to support the show in another way, you can go onto your app. And if you want to give us 5 stars, it helps us in the charts. It helps us with the algorithms. You can write whatever you want. You can even say you would rather have the show presented by Penelope Pitstop and Captain Sensible of the Damned, because I've just got tickets to see the Damned next April, and I'm really looking forward to that.
He is surprisingly sensible, Captain Sensible. Disappointingly so, I find. Although, to be fair, the Iranian players took a very brave stance, I thought, Kieran, by not singing the national anthem. So again, it's a political situation that's far more nuanced and complicated than we know. But as you say, we send our love and best wishes to all our listeners in Iran, and we hope you are safe and well. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football.
price of football.